Welcome to the Tennis Show on Love Sport, the inaugural edition with me, James Gray, doubles specialist Anna Smith, and Love Sport's tennis correspondent Abigail Johnson in the studio. Covering all the biggest stories, we're here on Wednesday of the first week of the French Open. We've just about got enough information in front of us in terms of who's playing well, who's playing badly, to make total idiots of ourselves. So we will be predicting, of course, some winners later on this evening. But first, we have to talk about the first rounders. Who's been going well? Who's been going badly? We've got Federer back on clay, Rafa and Novak in cruise control. Of the three men, Anna, the three big men, you talk about how cut and dry the men's game someone is. Who's impressed you the most of those three, do you think, in terms of their results?
I mean, it's hard to pick one of them. I think they've both looked really comfortable, or all three of them have looked really comfortable in their first rounds. I think Rafa put out a big statement with his first one. I think he dropped six games. Novak looked in cruise control as well, to be fair, and Rog, for the first time back in 4 years, looked like he hadn't been away.
It's kind of special watching Roger Federer on red clay again, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's amazing for Federer, the position he's in at the moment, where he's come to a surface and a tournament where actually the spotlight isn't on him, which he doesn't get throughout the year. There's nowhere else where he could go, I think, in this situation where he's able to just relax a bit and just swing. And he's spoken about that himself, the kind of the relaxed nature of what he's doing and the way he's just able to go out, you know, unleash that backhand and nail that first serve. And I think in the way he's playing, just the way he's so at ease with his surroundings and isn't feeling the pressure, that's definitely demonstrating itself. So I've been pretty impressed with Federer so far. I think he's been efficient. I don't think that he's kind of gone out looking to expend too much energy. I think he's playing a smart game. He's done what he needs to do in the first two rounds, I think.
I mean, that's like the skill of Grand Slams to a certain extent, isn't it? In the first week for these guys, it's about not spending too much time on court, isn't it?
I think so. But then at the same time, I think sometimes you almost want to be pushed a little bit, because then if you suddenly make the second week and you basically just have three easy matches, you're kind of, sometimes you can be a bit undercooked. So I think sometimes, you know, it's not a bad thing if you have a four or five setter in the first week.
Of course, you don't want to be Grigor Dimitrov, who's been through 2 5 setters in the first two rounds. Janko Tipsarevic and then Marin Cilic pushing him all the way. He's now walked into Stan Wawrinka. That top of the bottom already looks really tough. You know, he was maybe not one of the best of the rest we were thinking might be a challenger. He's obviously not seeded. But in terms of players from elsewhere in the draw, Abigail, if you were picking someone early doors, who would have been your guys who might challenge those big three, and how have they gone on, do you think?
Oh, well, Stefanos Tsitsipas is a name that comes to mind. He's had a really decent clay court season. Another one actually is Daniil Medvedev, who went out in the first round. He had a really tough draw, though, against Pierre Huber, who is obviously a doubles player, plays a lot of doubles, and has put that on hold to play singles. So he's very damaging, challenging from all areas of the court. Not sure if Herbert is still in. He was playing against another Frenchman earlier. James can check that one out for me.
Oh, he's going to a fifth set up in my pair.
Oh, is he? There we go. But Tsitsipas, with the style that he produces, he's a very Federer-esque player. I think you see in quite a few players coming up at the moment that model the game on his. And originally, I wasn't expecting that game style to thrive on clay, but actually, he's really been stepping up. Got that win over Rafael Nadal during the clay court season. And he came through a four-setter today, I think, against Hugo Delian, and responded really well after dropping the first set. He was kind of pushed around a bit, pushed and pulled. There was lots of slice and dice going on. But he was very creative in the way he responded, and very mature, I think, in the way he handled the match. So Tsitsipas definitely wants to keep an eye on, I would say.
I mean, we should be seeing some pretty good clay court performances from him, right? Like, he's obviously moved to Muratoglu. There's obviously a lot of clay facility there for him to work on. And I think he talked about clay as the best surface to start on, or the sort of thing that everyone should learn on. I mean, Anna, I don't think you're the biggest fan of red clay.
I was going to say, I'm probably not the best, the expert on clay, but I'd probably say it gives you a little bit more time. I guess you kind of not rush as, like, when you're learning on a fast hard court, you probably have a little bit more time to work on technique, a little bit more time with your shot selection, so you can kind of learn the game a little bit better when you've got that time, and then be able to progress to the different surfaces.
But then obviously when you're, you know, when you're, for example, your level, the surfaces, obviously, you're not a level you're learning the game anymore.
Yeah.
How hard is it to take a, let's say, Daniil Medvedev, for example, had a great hard court season, moved actually, and has not done badly on clay, albeit he's out in the first round. How hard is it to adapt your game to the clay court when you're not someone who's had success on that before?
I mean, it can be tricky for sure, because you look at someone like Medvedev, he hits the ball so flat, which is never going to be that successful on a clay court, whereas obviously on a hard court or a grass court, it's going to be so much better. So I think it's about how willing the player is to change their game style and adapt to the conditions. I didn't see Medvedev's match, but I'm guessing that he's probably still trying to hit through the court. And you know, that's tricky to do that for five sets on a clay court. It takes a lot of energy. And if you've got someone who's making a lot of balls, then it's probably not going to be his favourite surface, that's for sure.
A man who also seems to, well, both love and hate five-setters at the French Open is Alexander Zverev. He went all the distance with John Millman in the first round. He's taking on, I'm going to say, Mikhail Ymer, Y-M-E-R. I think Ymer. I might have got that right in the second round.
Yeah.
A qualifier, thank you. Now, he's obviously been working with Evan Lendl for 8 months now, I think, or 9 months, best part of. And we thought this might have the Murray effect, you know, take him from a very good player to a great player. It doesn't. This is still Alexander Zverev going to five in the first round of the French when he really shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's interesting with Zverev, because I think initially when he was going to five set matches and winning them, I thought, oh, maybe this is a good thing for him in the long run, because it's all about the mental strength of being able to come through. But actually, now he's going to more of them. You have to ask yourself, you know, expending so much energy at the beginning of a tournament, this is a guy who's ranked high, who has the ability to be going deep. I mean, he won Rome last year. He was doing well across clay at all events. And this is a guy who you would expect to be up there as a title contender. Five sets in the first round, it's not ideal. What I would say about this particular tournament is, obviously, Zverev didn't have a great run coming in. He was really struggling for form up until last week when he won the title in Geneva. And John Millman is so committed and he's such a battler. And I expected that one to go long just because Millman himself has been in such good form recently. So I think take a bit of the... I don't know, the judgment for this five setter off Zverev when you consider that it was John Millman that was across the net from him. But then again, you know, he was two sets to love up. That's quite a commanding position for him.
And it's not a new problem. He had three consecutive five setters last year, and it must take it out of you, especially on clay where it is a more tiring surface. You have longer points. That said, his half of the draw, his section of the draw, could really open up. He's playing some form players, but guys who don't necessarily have the Grand Slam form. Dusan Lajovic is in there, Fabio Fognini, both of whom have played very well on clay this year, but don't have the kind of the Grand Slam pedigree. He should see this as an opportunity, shouldn't he?
I mean, I guess you probably could say that, but then again, you probably have to look at his Grand Slam record and say it's not the best in comparison to the other tournaments he's played. And you look at him against Fabio Fognini, would you put him as a favourite? I probably would put Fognini as a favourite, if I'm honest.
I'd put five sets as a favourite, I'll tell you that much. It's definitely going the distance in that case. Do you think it is just a mental thing? It can't be a game thing, surely.
No, I wouldn't say it's a game thing. I think probably because he knows that he's had such a poor record in the slams. I think he probably puts quite a lot of pressure on himself. And once you've had that, once you get that thing in your head and you're just like coming into every slam, you're like, oh, I feel like this is a time where, you know, I can push on into the second week, and when that doesn't happen, the next one comes around and the next one comes around, and it's that vicious cycle. So I think once he makes that breakthrough, I think he'll go on from there. But it's just a case of just stepping over that first hurdle, and once he does, then I think we'll see the real Zverev in the slams.
Let's move over and look at the women's draw. Serena Williams obviously always draws the focus. It's always hard in the first week of a women's slam in the modern era, when Serena's not in top form, to know where to look. Because there are threats pretty much all over the place. Serena obviously had a little bit of a slow start. She dropped her first set of the tournament. We talk about navigating first weeks. Serena is usually the queen of this. A sluggish start probably to be expected, given how little tennis she's played.
Yeah, I think at this point in time, I mean, Serena's played a lot of slams throughout her career, including an Australian Open title, which she won, where she's come in and she's not needed to have the prep because she's got the talent, she's got the drive, and she's absolutely willed herself through. I think at this point in her career, I think it was evident that she was a bit rusty stepping out on the court. She mentioned nerves. Nerves have been a thing for Serena at slams, but not to that extent, I don't think. And maybe it should have been expected for her to take a little time to get into it. As well, she was playing Vitalia Diachenko, who obviously beat Maria Sharapova first round of Wimbledon. She hits a really fast ball. It's nice and slick. And I think power tennis is doing a bit better on the clay courts this year. Serena was struggling to hang with it a bit, I think, in the first set. She wasn't moving that well. And she was getting pretty frustrated. And I think she just channeled that frustration into her game at the beginning of the second set, and for the rest of the match, that's what got her through.
But I also probably wouldn't say that clay is Serena's best surface. I think if you take grass, for example, she could come into Wimbledon having not played a match for a year on grass and you'd still make her the favourite. Whereas I think on the clay courts, I don't think that standardly would be her favourite. So I think if you're ever going to be vulnerable at a slam, I'd pick this one for her having not played. Then I'd probably say that this one was the one where, you know, she's going to have more of a slow start. And it'll be interesting to see in the next round if she has that slow start again, or if that first round has really given her a kick up the bum and got her into it.
That's really interesting, I think, because in recent years with Serena, obviously grass is her number one, and she went to Wimbledon last year not having played much, absolutely pounded her way through the opening rounds. I think the thing I feel with Serena on clay right now is that she enjoys that bit of extra time to get up to the ball, because we know what she can do when she's in the right positioning. And I think a lot of the power players are finding this at the moment, that, you know, just that those extra half seconds to get up and line yourself up correctly. I would still pick Serena as more of a favorite on grass courts, but I do think there are elements of the clay courts that the further she's gone on in her career, the more she's become a fan of it. I mean, she didn't used to be a massive fan of clay at the beginning of her career, and now I think she's a bit more at home on it. But no, really good point about the grass courts and Wimbledon in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, well, you can never rule Serena out of a Grand Slam, but you know, with such an open women's draw, there were few who came in with massive hopes. I know that Kiki Bertens, though, was one we were really hopeful might go out and have an impact in this tournament. She has withdrawn just in the last couple of hours from her second round match with illness. We understand she was shaking. She was not feeling well on court at all. She did press afterwards, to her credit, and actually was quite talkative. So I always, you know, as a journalist, you always like to see it when people make an effort. But she's, you know, under an obligation, but no one would have really held it against her had she gone away. But I know, Anna, you were thinking that she would go deep this week.
Yeah, I feel like she was probably one of my picks to make second week and make semis or final. But again, I think the women's draw is so open. I think there's probably sort of 10 or 12 players who you'd say could go deep or win the title. I really wouldn't know who to pick. The form that Kiki has showed over the clay court season and this whole year, she probably would have been up there with my top two favourites.
Karolina Pliskova, obviously the number two seed, she's into the third round already, pretty much cruised through. I think she's only dropped something like 9 games in her opening two matches. Abigail, I think you're pretty excited about her.
She's, I was watching her earlier, she hit 16 winners in the first set. I think by the end of 5 games, she's hit about 13 winners. She was smashing it, and she's really stepping in, taking advantage, making it look like a hard court, pretty much. And that's the way she plays. And we've seen this from Pliskova at the French Open before. You know, she's made the semis. She had Simona Halep on the ropes a couple of years ago. Going further into the tournament, I would be concerned just about Pliskova sustaining the level. There always seems to be something with Pliskova at big events, whether it be a major, whether it be a premier. There always seems to be something that stops her going all the way. So I would be a bit more concerned as we get to the back end. But for the time being, definitely one to keep an eye on. She is looking very much at home, won Rome obviously, so definitely one of the players in really good form at the time being.
And another player who's starting to look at home on the clay is Jo Konta. We'll talk about her next.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Now, in a week where there are plenty of British sporting fans abroad, some in Azerbaijan, some on their way to Spain, there are also a couple of Brits out in Paris doing their very best. Jo Konta is into the third round of the French Open for the very first time. She'd never even won a main draw match at the French Open. She won in straight sets in the first round. She's just beaten Lauren Davis 6-3, 1-6, 6-3. Not without incident, not without hiccup. But Anna, we just about sweated our way through it.
I know. I think with Jo, you can always expect a little up and down, but I was really impressed with the way she played and the way she pulled through in that third set. It was tough, you know. Lauren was coming back in that final set. I think it was she 5-love up, and then she got it back to 5-3, and you're like, oh, gets a bit squeaky sometimes, doesn't it? But then no, she did so well to pull it out, and I think she's had such a good clay court season. She's really confident, you know. I don't see why she can't have a good run and hopefully make second week.
And of course, that pullout that we mentioned of Kiki Bertens does open up her draw massively, because she would have bumped into her in the fourth round. That now leaves things a little bit more open for her. What do you think's changed about Jo's game on clay? Because I can't count the number of times I sat in a press conference and someone's gone, Joe, for want of a better phrase, you're not very good on clay. And she's gone, oh, everyone always says that. And the reason we always said it is because she didn't win many matches on clay. Has anything changed?
I think just mentality-wise, there's probably a bit of a difference. I think once you, and Anna can probably testify to this, once you pick up a few match wins, it's enough to completely change the tide sometimes. And with Konta, I mean, it's obvious that her game is a pretty good fit for clay. You know, she's got the topspin and ground strokes. She's pretty consistent from the back of the court, and she's doing her best to change it up at the moment. And I've been really impressed from what I've seen of her. And I think part of her frustration in past years about getting these questions is that she obviously knows deep down that she does have the ability to do well on the surface. And it's something, sometimes it just takes a bit of time. You know, Konta didn't make her breakthrough at the WTA level as early as some other players who are at the top anyway. And I think she's just a bit of a late bloomer and really coming into her own now.
But she's never lacked for belief, Anna. I think you were saying just before we came on air that that's one of the things so amazing about Jo.
Yeah, no, she's always had that self-confidence and that self-belief, and I think that's a massive thing for any sports person, let alone tennis player, to have. You know, you have to have that inner belief when you're on court that you can pull through on any surface, in any conditions, and I think she's always had that ingrained in her, which is a massive thing. So, you know, tennis is very up and down. You know, every week you're not going to win the tournament. Most weeks you're going to lose. So to have that strength and that character to be able to, you know, bounce back from the losses and, you know, she's been four in the world.
Yeah.
I think she's proven time and time again that she's an incredible player, and it was only a matter of time before she was going to, you know, do big things. And I think the Fed Cup as well recently was a massive thing for her. You know, she played first of all in Bath, all those three set matches that she played, and she pulled through under enormous pressure. And then also in the copper box as well, the two three set matches she had, you know, I think that was a huge thing for her. And then she goes on this run on clay, and then once you start picking up confidence, like you said, you never know what can happen. It's just, you know, she wants to keep that ball rolling. And I think knowing her, she's going to take it one match at a time. She's not going to look ahead. She's going to look at the next round. And that's going to be a big battle for her as well.
Looking ahead might be a bad idea, because looking at her draw, much as Kiki Bertens has opened it up, it closes right up again after that. Because if she does beat Kuzmova in the third round, it's either Donna Vekic, most likely, the 23rd seed, and then the best of Sloane Stephens, Muguruza or Elina Svitolina. It doesn't get any easier, but that's women's Grand Slams. You don't know who you're going to walk into, and frankly, anyone can beat anyone, can't they?
Exactly. This draw is littered with potential threats. I mean, Anna mentioned 10 to 12 players who could win it before. In the women's alone, left, right and centre, there are players that have been performing well that could win their first Grand Slam. There are former Slam champions, winners here. I'm thinking Garbiñe Muguruza, who is under the radar a bit and could potentially rise up. That is the nature of this event. And I think, in a way, maybe it makes it easier for the players going in. There's no one name that you particularly want to avoid in the draw, and therefore you just go, you take what you're given, and you focus on you. And I guess that's the best mental headspace to be in for a tournament of this prestige.
And of course, Brit's never traditionally done brilliantly at the French Open, but Carl Edmund is into the second round. Again, it wasn't easy. Probably, we mentioned this before, a nightmare draw, really, to run into Jeremy Chardy, a very good player and obviously a home player in the first round. It came through in five sets, a game that went overnight as well. He's now got Pablo Cuevas in the second round. That is a very tough draw for a guy who's so good on clay, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's the best second round draw you could have won.
No.
You don't want to be
when
playing...
you're already number 28 seed, you think, yeah, you get a little bit of luck, right?
Exactly. I mean, he's been 19 in the world. You know, I think South American clay's his favourite surface. You know, I don't think that's going to be an easy match. I think Carl's going to have to play well, but then again, you know, I think he stands a good chance. You know, he needs to bring his forehand into play. If he can serve well, I don't see why he can't potentially make third round, and then, you know, anything can happen.
Is he a natural clay court player? He doesn't look like it to me. His game doesn't feel like, you know, when you consider that Carl, according to Kyle, has the best forehand in the world. you know, you don't necessarily think of him as a natural clay court player.
I don't know. I think Edmund's always kind of favoured clay and enjoys playing on it. I think his forehand actually is a decent fit for it. I think Edmund's in a good position in that his game actually translates well across surfaces. And he, you know, when he's in a consistent place, that forehand especially, I noticed against Chardy, when he got it on his forehand wing, he was generally winning the point. And obviously Chardy was trying to mix it around a bit, so to make him a bit more uncomfortable. And, you know, with that first round win, I think it was so important almost for Edmund to have to fight out the win for his mentality, because he was on a 5-match losing streak, and to get that sort of victory against a quality opponent who had the crowd behind him. If he gets further in the tournament, maybe he'll begin to get a bit fatigued if he's out there fighting for so long. But just for his mentality, for his confidence in general, I think that's a terrific match to have come through. And with the weight as well overnight and it getting held over, tested in so many different aspects. And
massively.
Yeah, still able to rise up and come through.
Well, I tell you what, if we're still talking about Carl Edmund in the French Open this time next week for next week's episode, he'll have done extremely well, because he's likely to run into Dominic Thiem in the third round. Which that's exactly the right face. The face Anna make essentially just goes,
That was exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's clearly been smashing some mirrors or something, because he's not lucked out there. But look, you've got to beat the best if you want to win majors.
And, exactly.
Who knows? That's where we want Carl Edmund to be one day. Of course, there was a not such a good result for Cam Norrie. He was supposed to play Nick Kyrgios. Kyrgios pulled out, and he ran into a qualifier who was just on a hot streak and went out. Well, I saw the word humiliating used in the headline. I thought that was a little bit harsh, actually.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I think sometimes they can be a little bit harsh, the critics. You know, sometimes you have a bad day at the office, and unfortunately for him, that was the first round of the French Open. But, you know, I think he's had a really good clay court season so far, and in general, a brilliant season. So I think he's probably deserves to be cut a little bit of slack. You know, yeah. we all have those days where you just can't get anything going, and I think that was probably one of them.
I also just want to touch, since we're talking about the Brits, on Jamie Murray. News this week that he's broken up with his doubles partner Bruno Suarez. He's now playing with one of the Skupskis.
Neil
Skupski. I knew that, obviously. There's nothing necessarily untoward about doubles partners breaking up. Anna, you obviously played a heck of a lot of doubles, and this is just something that happens, is it? They've been very successful, and now they're not being so successful.
Yeah, I think they've been together about 3.5 years, and you know, the first year they played together, won the Australian Open, US Open, finished the year as world number one. It's hard to go any better than that. Yeah, so I think sometimes, you know, you need a change, you need a new face, a new energy. And I know Neil and Jamie have played together in a couple of challenges. I think they won one as well. Yeah. So I think it's a good fit. They both work with Louis Caillé as well, so they can work on their games together. And yeah, I think it's definitely part and parcel of the doubles tour. You know, some people like to chop and change partners. Other people prefer to have a steady partner. And I think it's probably time to have a change, because I think their results were quite up and down. And
are you the kind of person who always like to play with the same person or same couple of people, or are you a bit of a chop and changer?
No, I normally like to have consistency.
I mean, that makes sense to me, right? Yeah. That you want to play with the same person, build up a relationship, understand their games.
Yeah, it's hard, because it's also hard to find someone who matches your game style. It's you know, you can have the two biggest name players playing together, but if their styles don't match, then they're not going to have good results. So I think it's better to have that chemistry on court. You know what the player's doing, you know what you're doing. I think it, for me personally, I'd rather play with the same person on a regular basis.
Well, we have someone else who comes on a regular basis. That's Roz Satter. We'll be speaking to her next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the tennis show on Love Sport with me, James Gray, Anna Smith and Abigail Johnson. And we're now joined on the line, I'm delighted to say, live from Paris by Roz Satter. Roz, are you sunburnt? Are you damp? What's the weather like in Paris this time of year?
Bonsoir tout le monde. I'm all elbows akimbo trying to get a portion of fruit from court one, where everybody dipped out after Joe finally got over the line against Lauren Davis. So actually a little frazzled. Le frazzle, I would say.
Is that the technical term? Right, okay. That's Let's not conduct term. Any more of this in French than we have to, because otherwise you're going to get beyond my GCSE B. Joe Konter, through in three sets. What did you make of her game?
Oh, my goodness. Well, the first set I thought was about what I figured for the par. You know, Lauren Davis is a scrappy little player. She plays just as aggressively as Joe. There wasn't really much between them in the first set. But the second set, heaven knows what happened there. She just went complete walkabout. And it was a real shocker. I'm glad that she did stop the run of games, because I had visions of that being a horrible, horrible end. And then in the third set, it seemed to be that Davis went off on a bit of a wander, and, you know, managed to sort of claw it back while Joe got very, very tight. She was you know, that serving arm was as tight as a drum. But she got over the line. She is in the third round. And as we know, she will not be facing one of the favourites, Kiki Burton. She'll be facing Victoria Kuzmova.
Do you think that's a real challenge for her? Obviously, Kiki would have been a much more serious challenge, but how do you think that works out for her game in terms of a matchup?
Well, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Kuzmova's also got to the third round, albeit, but you know, with the end of a walkover. But you know, she's not had that bad a sort of clay court run. So, and I just don't think that Jo still trusts herself on the surface. She had a fall actually towards the end of that. Of that run of five games, and I wonder whether it shook her confidence a little bit. I mean, she should come through this match with Kuzmova, you know, but I think it will be another three-set tussle with a lot of nerves.
So, Roz, Jo's been having a really good run on clay. She's played a lot, obviously, coming into this event. We're seeing the draw opening up a bit now. What kind of things do you think might have an impact on her if she keeps going in the draw? Do you think tiredness or anything might set in?
I mean, I think the run to Rabat, in fact, even before that, I think the Fed Cup was what gave her a sudden kick of confidence. She spoke a little bit as well about her coach and how he's letting her sort of figure out what she needs to do. I do wish she'd unfigure out those drop shots sometimes, though. They just turn everybody blue. I think her confidence is generally high. And I think the closer that she sort of gets to closing out a match further down the line in Roland Garros, you know, it does seem to sort of weigh on her mind a bit. I know she played down the fact that she'd won her first main draw match, but I think deep down she was very relieved to get that monkey off her back.
Let's switch over to the men's draw, because I won't ask you to unravel the women's draw. It's a nightmare, even at this early stage, to try and pick a winner. Who's really impressed you on the clay at Roland Garros so far in the first 3 days?
Well, I against myself, I hadn't really rated Federer's chances that much until I watched his first match. And the pop that's coming off his strings, I mean, I did actually think that little sort of TVs that we have was glitching, because I couldn't believe that the ball was coming round that fast to poor Sonego. So I think if the draw goes his way and if there are any unforeseen mishaps, he might well fancy his chances of at least making the final and surprising, you know, pulling off a shock. Tsitsipas, I would have said, impressed me until he made a bit of a mess of his, at the beginning of his second round. Team didn't impress me at all. He made a mess of his first round. So, to me at the moment, the front runners just still seem to be Nadal and Djokovic.
We were talking about Kyle Edmund earlier, and obviously his nightmare draw. Although, if Team's not playing that well, maybe that opens it up a little bit more for him.
Perhaps. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Team plays next time around, because he looked tight, he looked nervous, he didn't really seem to be flowing freely. But then, you know, I think there's a lot of nerves around this year. I don't know why. Everybody seems to be as jumpy as a cat on our, you know,
it's Brexit, Ross. It's Brexit. It's making us all uncomfortable. We're all very nervous about it.
I don't think I'm actually going to be able to come back into the country, I think.
So, oh, well. Yeah. Oh, no. Poor you. Stuck in Paris. Sounds awful.
Yeah.
If you need someone to look after your house in Wimbledon, Ross, then I will pop round and just make sure it's all okay. And I promise not to have any parties.
I wish I had a house in Wimbledon. I do have a house in Richmond, though, that you can stay at.
It's basically the same thing, isn't it? Like, it's essentially the same. You can you walk to the All England Club?
What, from Richmond?
Well, no. I thought you walked to Wimbledon last year.
Yeah, from the train station. Yeah.
Right, okay, fine. Who's your winner, then? Is it Federer who's going to go and win the French Open, or do you think, actually, that Nadal and Djokovic are still...
You know what, I'm going to doggedly stick with Djokovic as my pick, because I'm stubborn and old like that. I do think he'll do it, but I just don't think it's going to be pretty. I think it's just going to be gritty, burnt-out tennis the whole way through for Djokovic. I think he wants to put himself, you know, through suffrage to get this next Nole Slam. But yeah.
He likes suffering, Novak. I've always thought that he likes suffering.
Yeah, I think he does. To be honest with you, James, I think he does. I think it actually brings out the best in him. I think when he's dominant, and it's, you know, and that's the narrative, then it doesn't really sort of sit as well with him. I think if he feels that he's earned it, You see a little bit more feistiness from him, which I prefer. So I'm going to stick with Djokovic, and yeah, that's my hill I'm going to die on.
Roz, I said I wasn't going to make you unravel the women's draw, but I've changed my mind because I've realised I'm going to have to predict it later, and it's getting harder and harder with every passing minute. Who do you think is going to win the women's singles?
Oh, you know what? Kiki Bertens would have been my pick.
Same. Anna's the exact
mine,
same.
Yeah, she was mine too.
Absolutely
yeah.
Got it.
I know. I mean, it was just desperately sad to watch. And she sort of struggled a little bit this year towards the tail end. So, thankfully, I hadn't picked Bianca Andreescu, so I don't feel quite so bad about her pulling out. I'm going to say either Halep or maybe Pliskova.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think we can necessarily complain about that. Roz, thank you very much for joining us as always. Bonsoir, and see you tout de suite, I'm sure, and speak to you next week. That's Roz Satter out in Paris at Roland Garros there.
From Adams Park to Wembley, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
This is the tennis show on Love Sport with me, James Gray, Anna Smith and Abigail Johnson. It's time to go down the line when we discuss one of the big topics in tennis. And I was inspired to choose this by Nick Kyrgios, which you both said to me, oh, we always talk about Nick Kyrgios. He's a man that everyone loves to hate. He's marred by Anna, as you quite rightly said. And I wanted to ask the question after his latest on-court outburst, throwing a chair on, and also having seen Leander Meyer shouting at a ball boy for having the temerity to try and collect a ball, which I believe is their job, to be fair, during a point, although I suppose it's not the perfect time to do it. Are players punished enough for their on-court behaviour? Are they too shouty? Anna, I think you think tennis players get a hard time.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at obviously what Kyrgios did, I think that's a one-off, or well, not a one-off.
Not for him.
No, not for him, but I don't think it happens that often. I mean, the only thing I can think of is Nalbandian, I guess Serena in the US Open semis. Mm. It doesn't happen that often. So, you know, I think considering the pressure that tennis players are under, the top tennis players, and the conditions they have to play in front of thousands and thousands of people and millions of spectators, I think most of the time they hold their emotions in pretty well. And I think it's tough sometimes to kind of, for the public to understand the pressure they feel and not having a way to be able to show those emotions. Because, you know, if you throw your racket, you're going to get a code violation. If you shout and swear, you're going to get a code violation and the crowd are going to boo you. So there's not really that much you can do to kind of let that out. So I think sometimes, you know, if someone throws a racket or, you know, shouts or something, like, I think public and people have to realise that it's just, it needs to be done sometimes, and we're not machines and robots that can just kind of suppress our feelings. And I don't know, I think sometimes they get a bad rap. Not that I'm condoning what Kyrgios I'm not condoning what Kyrgios did the other day.
But you think he doesn't represent?
No, for the most part, I don't think he does. I think that his, what he did, yeah, in Rome was 100%, he crossed the line. Yeah. I don't think you can just suddenly launch a chair and do whatever he did. I think he definitely crossed the line. But at the same time, I think sometimes, I think they do get a bit of a
shouting at the back of the court, Abigail.
Here's the thing. I mean, I think there's some really good points there. And I hate this thing of sitting here in the judgment seat, you know, saying who's done well and who's not. And because I'm not there, you know, I'm not on the court. I'm not feeling the emotions and I'm not at that point in the match. And it's natural in all of life to get frustrated when things aren't going your way. So I think, you know, the boos to smashing the racket and stuff, it can be overdone because, you know, there are some people that aren't doing it much. But I think when it comes to, are they punished enough? You know, it's not necessarily about how often are they doing it. It's when they do step out of line, like Kyrgios clearly did with that incident with throwing the chair. Is he being punished enough for that specific incident? Because we can all agree that that was well out of line. He was perfectly in control of what he was doing. It was an extended incident, that one was. And then you have to look at, well, what are the punishments in place? I mean, he got fined, I believe. I'm not sure how much he was fined.
$30,000, okay. Or his prize money, at least.
So. Yeah, so he didn't get his prize money for the tournament, didn't get his ranking points. So if you're going to go on from there for that specific incident, I guess the next thing would be a suspension. And you have to wonder, is a suspension too big of a thing? And maybe if it was something as big as a suspension, maybe it would make players think in that moment when he had the choice, am I going to hurl this chair across the court or not? If that was hanging over his head, maybe it would make him think a bit more about it, I guess.
I just wonder whether some of these situations, you know, you think of the high profile ones, say Serena, and it's happened twice with Serena, both at the US Open, once with a line judge and once, of course, with an umpire. I wonder whether at the very highest level, some of them feel like they're above the law. They feel like, actually, this isn't about you, Carlos Ramos, or whoever it happens to be sitting in a bizarrely high chair. I just find those chairs weird. I think they're very odd, but I think it's strange.
You've got to give them some perspective.
In no other sport does an umpire sit on a laddered chair. But anyway, it's not the point I'm trying to make. In those high-profile situations, I think those players just think, well, you know, this isn't about you, it's about me. This game's about me, and you're getting in the way of it. Don't we need to actually put a bit more of protection on there for umpires?
Do you want to go?
I mean, I don't...
I'm not expecting you to take side with umpires, Anna. Yeah. I assume you think they're the devil as well.
No, I mean, I've had a couple of run-ins with umpires.
So, oh, good!
Know, not very many. but on the odd occasion, I haven't agreed with a call that they've done.
Have you prolonged it? Have you been standing there going, I'm not playing until you let me say my piece?
Oh, I had one occasion, and I think it was in Rio a few years ago, and there was a tight line call on clay. I think it was like 9-all in the match tiebreak, and I was convinced that the line judge had called it out, and then they corrected it, and I'd hit the shot, and the umpire said that it affected my shot. Or it didn't affect my shot. Mm. And I was adamant that the guy had called it out whilst I was hitting my shot. So I didn't go off on one, but I was just sort of very adamant. But obviously the umpire didn't change her mind.
Did you get in trouble for that?
No, because I wasn't very aggressive. I was just a little bit stubborn.
Right.
But
there's a line. Clearly.
Yeah, you have to, if you start, you know, shouting and swearing at the umpire, saying what a terrible job they're doing, I think that's where you can't do that. Mm. Yeah. I don't think anyone should be subjected to that in any job they do.
No. Somehow a fan is allowed to stand up if you're playing badly and boo you for missing a volley.
But then also, you know, on social media and stuff, the stuff they get to say, I don't think that's fair. So, you know, like I said, we're not robots. We do have emotions. But, you know, at the same time, you still have to have respect for the umpire. They're doing their job as best they possibly can. Mm. And, you know, they are going to make mistakes. But it's obviously hard when it's on the biggest scene. And,
but
you know, you're playing for the biggest prizes. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. What bugs me about on-court behaviour from players is people who shout at their box the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Kyrgios has obviously been very guilty of this. I know Andy went through a period of doing it almost all the time. Every time he missed a shot, it was somehow their fault. That really bugs me. And I don't know if you can get... Can you get a code violation for shouting at your own box if you don't swear?
I don't think so.
Maybe that's why they do it then. They figure, well, if I can, I'll shout at mum if no one else.
Yeah. Well, there's no one else on court to shout at. So you kind of want to direct it at someone. You're not going to shout at some random member of the crowd. No, you just look at them and be like, oh my God, I'm playing terrible today.
I mean, have you ever had a real big fallout on court?
Never. No.
That's quite impressive.
No, I've never had a fallout with a doubles partner. Not on court, definitely not. You're supposed to, you have to be there to support them. And obviously, you know, if you have your box there, they're the only people you know are 100% cheering for you. So they're the ones who you're going to vent your frustration to. And, you know, they're the ones who are going to be looking at you the whole time. So you can understand why they do it. I can see from a spectator's perspective that it does get frustrating when you've got someone who's constantly whinging and moaning. But sometimes that's the only where you can say something without, you know, getting a code violation or you know, you kind of have to do something.
Yeah, you don't have to go full McEnroe. Yeah. I'm almost disappointed that you didn't really hang out that umpire in Rio.
No, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I felt bad enough, like, going up to the chair and talking to her. So I think I'm too soft.
I wondered if your partner might intervene. Just like, ain't worth it, Anna, ain't worth it.
No, do you know what? Because normally I never do anything like that. So she kind of just let me go.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so she didn't even, like, hold me back. So I think she was, I think she could see that I was just, like, I had that look in my eye. So she was just like, okay, I'm just going to leave her to it.
Have you ever been in a situation, though, where going up and exchanging words with the umpire has actually changed the call? Because I understand why the players do it. It's so frustrating. But at the end of the day, the umpire's made the call. All you're going to do is expend energy kind of moaning about it, because whether you're right or wrong, it's not going to change, right?
No, they never change their mind. Once they've made a decision, they don't change it. So it is futile.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop you in the moment.
No, but I wonder if players, you know, I'm sure we've seen it when they use it to try and break some rhythm. It's like, I'm just going to stand here and shout at the umpire for 30 seconds because it's going to stop him serving for 30 seconds and try and break it up. I don't know whether players would use it like that.
There was tactical things all the way through tennis. Yeah. I think your medical timeouts is another thing.
Toilet breaks.
Yeah, and exactly.
There's so many players who use toilet breaks as tactical timeouts and things like that. But also I think sometimes, especially in the lower levels, you know, where you don't have Hawkeye and things like that, and you don't have necessarily all your lines covered with lines judges,
a lot
of the time players will go up to the umpire if they think they've had a bad call and try and intimidate them. And the amount of times I've seen it where a player has gone and shouted at the umpire and then they've got a couple of good calls after that, you know, is that sportsmanship?
Maybe it's worth shouting at the umpire. That's the revelation on the Tennis Show on Love Sport. You need to be shouting at the umpires more. Now for the really difficult bit of the Tennis Show here on Love Sport Radio, which is when we ask our co-hosts and, well, yeah, all right, I'll do it as well. Fine. We've got to try and make some predictions. We're 3 days into a slam, so we've got a reasonable amount. It's not like pre-tournament, you know, although if your pick has already gone, then that probably feels quite rotten, which I know, Anna, in your case, Kiki Burton's has gone. Let's start with the women's draw because it's harder.
Oh, no, don't do that.
No, we've got to. It's the only way we can do it. Abigail, come on then.
You're putting me first.
Pre-tournament. Who did you fancy pre-tournament?
Pre-tournament, it was between three for me. I picked these three randomly because I feel like if I think into it, I've got all these names going round. I think, well, they could because of this, they could because of that. So the three names I picked ahead of tournament, okay, this has changed a bit, were Naomi Osaka. My instinct said Osaka after the Australian Open because she just lives for these big events. She's not fantastic outside of them in terms of maintaining focus throughout matches and in terms of maintaining her level, but when it comes to the big events, she just rises on the occasion because she wants to play the big players, she wants to be out on those big courts. So I had Osaka down. She's played decently on clay before and she's shown even this season that she's all right when she's in position, you know. Serena Williams, because while Serena isn't limping off the court, you know, I'll always have Serena up there because 23 Grand Slams, multiple at the French, can't argue with that. And Petra Kvitova, who pulled out. So you've narrowed down. I've now replaced Kvitova with Garbiñe Muguruza because I think she's under the radar, won here twice before, thrashed Serena Williams on a couple of occasions, and she's had a decent draw early on. So I think it could open up for Muguruza.
She's warmed into it fine. I think her problem is now going to be that she's got an absolute belter of a third and fourth round, which is Elina Svitolina, and then if she beats her, she probably gets Sloane Stephens. If you get through that, what is left of you anyway? You know, it's like the Monty Python sketch. Yeah, sure, you've won the fight, but you haven't got any arms or legs left. Sure. So how are you?
I wonder if Svitolina will be a bit cold in the third round. She got a walkover in the second round. And sometimes when a player has that disruption to their rhythm during a slam, sometimes it can be positive, more energy, but other times they can have kind of lost the step a bit, I guess.
Well, of course, in a slam, you're already playing every other day. That probably is quite hard, Anna, to go and, you know, let's say you play on Monday and then you don't play your another match until Friday.
Yeah.
Does it leave you a bit cold?
Yeah, it can be, because obviously, you know, on the regular tour, you're virtually playing every day, so you kind of build up that rhythm. And I think Svitolina played Sunday and she won't play till Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's unheard of, basically.
That's rough.
So, you know, she's probably going to have 3 days, maybe a day off, and then 3 days of practice. But, you know, it's almost like the tournament's starting again for her. But, you know, then you say that she's played Venus Williams first round. So, you know, she didn't have to ease into it. Yeah, exactly. You know, that's probably the worst first round draw you could have asked for.
Mm.
And then she came through 3-3. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that's detrimental to her. I think Svitolina is one hell of a competitor, and she's not going to let someone like that get in her way. But yeah, like you said, Burton's was probably my
Yeah, you've
my
obviously
pick.
Been blown out of the water I by know. The sick bug that's going around. Because there's been a little bit of illness going around, actually. I wonder if there's something in the water at Roland Garros. Maybe we'll have to do a little bit of investigation on that over the next week. See if Roz picks it up as well. Maybe that's what we'll ask Roz. If Roz, you can get ill, and then you can find out what all the players have got. It'll be fine. So who have you had to pick up in place of Kiki Burton's now that you've lost... obviously someone who's in such good form and even in the first round was looking in good shape.
It's almost nice to get another shot, really. I mean, so many players, let's go through them one by one.
I was
going to
say, I feel like I could just pick it out of the hat because there's so many that I could see winning. You know, obviously you've got Halep who wants to come back and defend her title. You know, she had a tough one yesterday. But then again, like we were saying, maybe those tough ones are the ones that really get you into the tournament and she's not going to give up the title without a fight.
Sure.
Yeah, you've got Osaka who... I mean, you never know what you're going to get with her. Like the other day, She was, I don't know if she had match points, but the girl served for it twice. Again, can't count out Serena.
Do you think that early, because obviously we've talked about Osaka a lot, and she did struggle in that first match massively. I think someone said she was in tears on court as well.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that wake-up call early in a slam is sometimes quite good? You know, you'd rather that happened in the first round against a player you can come back against than in the quarterfinal against someone who you can't.
For Osaka, I thought that was ideal, just because it's Osaka. You know, she struggled there against a player who she should certainly have been beating. And she got, I mean, it was Anna Karolina Shmyedlova. She's not been in fantastic form recently. She had two opportunities to serve for the win, and she tightened up on both of them. So Osaka really got a few gifts in that match. And better she gets it there than against a top player. I mean, the top players in her section, I think, are going to be really wary now, because she's... someone swung at the queen and they missed, you know? Yeah. And that's serious business, especially in a Grand Slam. Osaka already knows at this young stage of her career how to rise for these majors. And to me, when she came through that match, as unimpressive as she was early on, I think that makes her an even stronger contender for the rest of the tournament.
Anna, Osaka and Williams for you, is it? I'm going to need one more.
Okay, I'm going to go Pliskova.
Because you think she'll hold it. She'll hold it together.
I reckon after watching her in Rome, I reckon I'm going Pliskova.
All right. I've been trying to talk myself into and then out of Elise Mertens, because she's been in such poor form on clay this season. But I like that bit of the draw. I like that little bit of the bottom half of the draw, because you've already lost a couple of seeds, because Wozniacki's out, Gorgeous is out as well. So I'm kind of looking at Sevastova and hating it, because obviously she ran into Kiki Bertens as well. But I just think Sevastova could go very deep in that bottom half of the draw without playing too many very strong players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes, especially in the women's singles, slams are about draws, because you can get all the good players grouped in top two sections.
Massively.
But let's not, you know, it's tempting fate to say Jo Konta. I don't think she's going to win the French Open. But it's looking, you know, she's in good nick. She's obviously got a little bit of a fortunate one with Kiki Bertens. And if she can get herself into the tournament, she's got Donna Vekic in the fourth round, potentially. Obviously, that's going to be a pretty high-powered encounter. Mm. Could she beat Vekic? I mean, she could.
Oh, definitely. I know that they've had a few...
ding-dongs.
At Wimbledon, especially, you know, 7-8-6 in the thirds, or God knows whatever they've had. You know, and Vekic has been playing well on clay. But I honestly don't see any reason why Jo couldn't go far in this. You know, as long as she takes it one match at a time. You know, she has got a tough one next against Kuzmova, but... at the same time, she comes through that. She's on a roll. She's got that confidence. You know, I really don't see any reason why she couldn't do well.
Let's move on to the men's draw, because that's slightly easier. You're basically picking one from three or the rest. I will allow that as well. I started with Abia last time. Anna, who are you picking out the men's draw?
So did you say we're allowed one from the big three and then one of the rest?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I think that's the best way. I think that's the best way to do it, because I can't let you say, oh yeah, Djokovic and Nadal, because it would just
and
be
Federer.
Ridiculous. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. God. It's so hard with the men. Okay, I'm going to say Nadal, purely because I think he's really going to try and stamp his authority. You know, in his terms, he hasn't had the best clay court season, only making semis of all of them and winning one. Mm. I think is, you know, he'd probably consider that not his best. So I think he's really going to want to make his mark here. So I'd probably go Rafa. And then, I mean, it's not really like outside of the box, but I'd probably go Thiem. Mm. I don't think you can kind of look past him as well. You know, finalist last year. And a great clay court player, so I'd probably, Dominic Thiem would probably be my other one.
Abigail, where are you going?
I don't need two, you know, it's Rafael Nadal for me. And that's,
wow.
Yeah, here we go.
So confident.
It's all on the line.
I mean, you know, 11 titles, hello. But no, with Nadal, I wasn't sure, you know, before the event, I was leaning Djokovic, and I always pick Nadal for the French. But I think Rome just completely changed things, because Nadal... It was a journey for him throughout this clay court season. He started off, he was rusty, and then because of that, his confidence got knocked. So he was building that up. He got himself into a good place, but then he just wasn't there in the key moments. And then finally in Rome, he took that step up, not only won a title, but beat Novak Djokovic in the process. And it was kind of that double whammy thing, getting the win over Djokovic and the trophy at the same time. And what stood out to me in that final was Nadal won the first set 6-love. Djokovic looked tired. And that made me raise some question marks about him in terms of, is he going to have the energy after six matches to get to the final? He's facing Nadal in Nadal's favourite conditions across best of five. And to me, I mean, yeah, Federer's playing well. I see Djokovic as Nadal's biggest opponent, biggest rival here. Is he going to have enough in the tank? And I think that Djokovic can will himself to places, but Nadal, you know, he's landing the forehand so well. His first serve is actually pretty devastating at the moment. And as far as the draw goes, Djokovic likes to have some quality opposition to really test himself early on. But I think it's been ideal for Nadal in that he's had a couple of largely unknown players and he's just been able to get the straight sets wins and for his confidence to be able to ease through. I think it's massive. I think for Djokovic, yeah, it's more about being tested physically. For Nadal, it's just about getting those results on paper that look good, that make him feel confident. And, you know, he's won here so much before. It's Nadal for me.
I think Nadal's biggest mistake for me was beating Djokovic. In the way that he did,
interesting.
I think it put too much information into the Djokovic computer. I just think he's such a good player tactically. He understands the game so well. He's seen a lot of situational tennis with Nadal in the current form that they both are. And I just wonder whether that chip, you know, Djokovic is like a wounded bear. He's so much more dangerous when he's bleeding than when he's not. And
sure.
That's what I really like about him. Outside of that, I don't really see, because it's the French Open, because of the specialist skills required, I think those three are so far ahead, a bit like you, I don't see much beyond that. I've been trying to pick a way through the draw for Karen Khachanov, and I think that's quite open, even though I'm getting a massive shake from Anna, but I've got it from every single prediction I've made
don't
so
far.
Don't
see it happening.
No, James is just going way out here.
I
like, right,
I
the lowest ranked player
I like
in
that.
The tournament.
I don't, but the people he's got to play on the way to the quarterfinals are not necessarily going to challenge him. He might get Martin Kleizan in the third round.
He can be tricky.
Yeah,
a lefty, to Khachanov's backhand. I don't know if that's going to be that much fun for him.
Basically, the only bloke who's beaten Khachanov on clay this year is Fernando Verdasco, and that's just...
Lefty.
He's just got something in his head about...
Kleizan's a lefty
great
as well.
All right. So I just predict players, and you could pick holes in all my logic.
Go through the whole draw.
I'm really looking forward to next Wednesday when I come back and Karen Khachanov's the new odds-on favourite for the French Open. I'm going to be very smug indeed. That's all we've got time for on The Tennis Show here on Love Sport with me, James Gray, Anna Smith, Abigail Johnson. We'll be back next Wednesday at 7 p.m.